Welcome to Computing Lives, a podcast from the IEEE Annals of the History of Computing. This is the third installment of a four-part podcast about the development of the Intel 4004 processor. This installment is entitled BusyCom and Intel, Defining a Product. Our last two installments dealt with the Japanese side of this story. With this installment, we return to the United States. The history of Intel is well known and need only be summarized here. Intel was one of the so-called Fairchildren, the company started by the former employees of Fairchild Semiconductor. It was incorporated in July 1968 after Noyce and Gordon Moore left Fairchild to exploit the commercial opportunities of the emerging large-scale integration technology, or LSI. Intel's primary goal was to produce a semiconductor computer memory to replace magnetic cores. The company's first big success came in late 1970 when it introduced the 1103 with 1 kilobyte dynamic random access memory. By 1972, this product was replacing core memories in large numbers and was the most successful semiconductor memory on the market. Already, Intel was supplying memory chips to 15 of the 18 largest computer manufacturers. When BusyCom first contacted Intel about developing the chip for its new line of computers, Intel was less than a year old. Despite the fact that BusyCom's project was outside of Intel's major line of business in semiconductor memories, Intel welcomed the business, both to build up its client list and to provide it with some contract work to ease its cash flow problems while it developed its proprietary memory chips. As Ted Hoff explained, "I was involved in some of the contract negotiations with BusyCom. Most of Intel's other products were proprietary, with the potential for fairly long design cycles. When you develop a new memory chip of your own design, you finally announce it to the world, and then you sit back for a year or two and wait for people to design it into their products and to get their production going. You are ready to make them by the millions, and people are just buying them by the ones and twos to try them out. So the business of trying to get around that is doing custom silicon. When you do custom silicon, you are working with a design team that you hope is ready to run as soon as you are. Having something like that, you hope will get you around that cash flow problem." In June 1969, BusyCom sent three employees to Intel's offices in Santa Clara, California, to describe the work they wanted done. Project manufacturer Mr. Masuda, senior engineer Mr. Takayama, and Shima, who was the junior member of the team but who nevertheless made the presentation. The contract task Shima outlined was to design a set of chips using LSI technology to run a family of high-performance programmable calculators. Read-only memory chips were to be added to customize the basic design for each model in the family. The meeting was followed on September 16, 1969, by a letter presenting a formal offer of contract. Intel originally gave responsibility for the BusyCom project to Ted Hoff, manager of the Application Research Department, with assistance from another engineer, Stanley Mazur. Hoff had a strong technical background, an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering from Rensselaer Polytech University in 1958, a PhD from Stanford in adaptive systems, what we would now call neural networks, in 1962, and 6 years of further experience at Stanford as a researcher, continuing his work on adaptive systems. He had joined Intel in 1968 and already completed some important work for the company on metal oxide semiconductors, MOS, random access memory. Before this assignment, which he received because of his systems and applications experience, even though by his own admission he was not a chip designer. Despite the value of the collaboration to both companies, the project did not progress smoothly during the first year. The Japanese team had already gone a long way toward completion of its design, having the logic schematics 80% to 90% complete in Shima's estimation. They expected, not unreasonably, that with all of this work completed, the chipset could be produced rapidly. Shima was at first optimistic about the collaboration, but his confidence soon faded. As he said, "Hoff had good abilities in many, many areas, including computers, software, circuit design, logic design, and simulation. In the beginning of the meetings, we thought that once we showed the logic scheme to them, they would understand what we wanted to do. But after several meetings, we found out they didn't have a logic engineer to understand our logic schematics, and they didn't have a circuit engineer to convert our logic schematics into circuit schematics. Also, they didn't know about desktop calculators themselves. For example, Seiko's printer was a line printer, unlike the slower serial printers that we're familiar with from Monroe calculators. Therefore, we had to explain what these desktop calculators were, what the line printers were, and how to control them. After a couple of months of discussion, we were not able to reach agreement. Also, we had to explain the function and control of the keyboard, display, and card reader. It's quite a difficult job for us to explain, because they had never seen them. Ted Hoff asked me many questions. I brought some other things. For example, the flowchart for the desktop calculators program. Many times I explained the desktop calculators program in the macro instruction set. He had a lot of questions about the flowchart. Then he asked me, "Why don't you explain the instruction set?" I explained the list of instructions for the desktop calculator, showing the hardware block diagrams and the flowcharts in the program based on the macro-level decimal instructions. Hoff, however, had a different perspective. He regarded the Busicom design as too complicated and too expensive to implement. If one wanted to sell calculators at a marketable price, he had been working with the Digital Equipment Corporation PDP-8 computer in his research and was struck by the difference between the PDP-8's lean architecture and the relatively complicated program logic of the Busicom design. He felt, in the Japanese design, that hierarchical structure of using building block over and over seemed to be lacking. In particular, Hoff was concerned that the control logic for the various peripherals was done by separate structures. The shift register memory required a complex timing. The elemental instructions were intricate. The PDP achieved its considerable power by making the design trade-offs of employing a Spartan instruction set, but at the cost of a large program memory. Hoff saw an opportunity to take advantage of Intel's strength in low-cost semiconductor memories to make the same design trade-off in the Busicom design. He believed this approach had other advantages, some of which were of importance to Busicom, which restricted its business interest to calculators. Reducing complexity of the elemental instructions could also make the resultant processor a more general-purpose machine. In the calculator, a program stored in ROM could utilize sequences of more general instructions, not only for arithmetic, but for keyboard scan and debounce, display maintenance, and other functions as well. With the flexibility, Hoff thought, a more general-purpose processor might find applications quite apart from calculators. In August 1969, Hoff proposed to Intel management this approach of building a calculator by making a computer that was programmed to act like a calculator. Intel management endorsed the idea, and Hoff began to develop it. Intel management was relieved not to have to design a larger chipset, such as Busicom proposed, because it would have taxed Intel's small staff. In a later interview, Noyce corroborated and commented on this point. It was a little difficult because we had at the time 4 or 5 circuit designers. We didn't have the spare resources to apply to this project, which was good because then that led Ted Hoff to the idea of trying to simplify the whole thing by finding an easier design path to their needs and their objectives. It's an old story. Necessity is the mother of invention. I can't do what you're asking me to do, so I've got to figure out a simpler way to do it. And of course, that was the origin of the idea of having a programmable unit there, which is really the essence of the microcomputer. Do the design job, have it programmable so that you can use it in many, many different applications. There was discussion prior to that of the number of new designs you'd have to do every day in order to realize the potential of large-scale integration. I recalled a discussion some years earlier at Fairchild, trying to extrapolate and guess what the world would look like if large-scale integrated circuits came into effect. And basically what you're saying is that we would have to design 10 circuits a day. This was at a time when designing a circuit took a year. And the question was, how would you ever accomplish that? The answer, of course, is that you don't. You find another way around it. However, Shima was not convinced. The basic idea from Ted Hoff was quite new, but to use his idea for my application, the detail was not so good. Lack of a system concept, lack of decimal operations, lack of interface to the keyboard, lack of real-time control, and so on. Shima had other problems with Hoff's approach as well. It required using the older transistor-transistor logic technology for system interface, whereas Busicom had approached Intel in the first place with the hopes of avoiding all use of transistor-transistor logics. replacing them with the LSI components that were supposed to be Intel's expertise. Shima was concerned about the great expense for the extra read-only memory that Hoff's design required. He was also frustrated that Hoff did not work out the details of his implementation. From August to October 1969, Hoff pursued his approach while Shima worked, also on-site at Intel, to approve and complete his original design. As Hoff remembers the situation, the Japanese engineers, Shima in particular, had a great reluctance to change the design. I can understand it. They had a big investment in it. They had already done a fair amount of coding, so it would be very reasonable that he would not want to. At a conference a few years later, Shima said, "I had to write all my code over again. The interaction was that I was going in one direction and the Japanese in another. Basically, they already had a design that was pretty well along. As we explained what we felt some of the problems with their designs were, they felt that they really did understand these problems and that they really did accept them. But they felt they could stay within the spirit of the original design to the logic, and so doing, they were cutting the number of transistors and the number of chips necessary, thus addressing Hoff's concern that the implementation of the BusyCom design would be too expensive." In October 1969, BusyCom executives visited Intel, and the two approaches were described to them. Hoff presented a set of four chips, 2 kilobyte read-only memory to store the program instructions, known as the 4001, 320-bit random access memory to store data, the 4002, a 10-bit shift register, the 4003, and a 4-bit central processing unit, the 4004. All of these were on chips with 16 or 18-pin packages, which was the standard in the semiconductor industry, unlike the packages that Shima designed with larger numbers of pins, which were technically better but did not conform to industry standards. In fact, Shima did not know enough about the semiconductor industry to know that there were standard packages. The 4004 microprocessor, which was the most complex of the four chips as proposed, involved integrating an estimated 1,900 transistors on a chip. Shima had reduced his design somewhat, but it still required 12 chips, averaging more than 2,000 transistors apiece, using non-standard 36 or 40-pin packages. Although these comparisons seemed to favor Hoff's approach, Hoff was surprised at the decision. "I always thought it was a coup that we managed to persuade the Japanese managers to choose our design over the one of their own engineers." You've been listening to Computing Lives. This installment of the podcast was based on an essay by Bill Asprey that appeared in Volume 19, Number 3 issue of The Annals. More about The Annals and other publications of the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. And to find The Annals, click on the Publications tab and go to Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts, including the first two podcasts in this series, can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, you can send them to podcasts@computer.org. Music for this podcast came from the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.